The Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Progressive Radio News Hour. This is Steve Lenman. Having a little trouble connecting with my guest this morning. We will continue to try. Well, you know, when sometimes you try to reach someone in a far-off place, it's not as simple as calling down the street or anywhere in one of the major cities, certainly the western ones. But let me tell you about my guest, and I hope we'll connect. We're getting strange busy when we call Finian Cunningham's phone number. He's on assignment on the Horn of Africa now. Finian is a musician. He's a writer. He's an activist. His home base is Northern Ireland, but when he's on site, he could be doing research anywhere. Last year, he spent months in Bahrain. He wrote about the brutal Al-Khalifa monarchy, and he's currently on the Horn of Africa, covering struggles in that strategic part of the world. At the same time, he's covering other major issues as well, especially in the Middle East. Oh, Finian, I hope we will connect. Last week, and I mentioned this to Finian in an email, had a guest from Saudi Arabia. I was really worried about that because I had my guest, who is an American and a friend. She's Rachel Rudolph. Listeners remember, she's researching a new book there, and I asked her to please check to see if her Saudi hosts would not object to her coming on my program. They may know I have not been too kind to them in the past, and she said, no problem in the world. Well, she came on, we connected fine, and had a fine program. That one worried me the most. Maybe the Horn of Africa has separate problems. I think Saudi is pretty modern and up to date. But we'll keep trying to get hold of Finian, and I'm sure the studio will clue me when he comes on. Let me mention also that Finian is Global Researches Middle East and East Africa correspondent. And he does marvelous writing. You can find his articles on global research. New ones pop up all the time. They're always on major issues, and I strongly recommend everything he writes. We wanted to talk about this morning. He said he had some new information on Bahrain. I'm not quite certain what it is, so I can't comment on what he may have in mind. But he's done a good bit of writing on the strife in the Middle East, and that's certainly a topic I've written plenty about, focusing most recently on Syria and Iran. And I put out a new article today on former U.S. policymakers, I call it, promoting war on Iran. Of course, what they always do is they propagate misinformation and blatant lies, saying one thing that completely contradicts the facts. Iran threatens no one. Neither does Syria. Claims about Iran's nuclear program, military that is, are completely unfounded. No evidence proves it, according to U.S. intelligence and the IAEA. But yet these lies keep resurfacing. And Israel is extremely belligerent. Before airtime this morning, I drafted an article on just extremely hostile comments coming out of three Israeli leaders. Shimon Peres, the president, former three-time prime minister, now he's 88 years old, serving in a ceremonial post. But when he says something, it gets reported. And he had plenty to say, and it was all spurious, duplicitous, bald-faced lies from beginning to end. And Israel's IDF chief of staff, Benny Gantz, same thing, spewing the same lies. you know, couching them in maybe slightly different terms, but the same lies. And Israel's military head of intelligence, he did the same thing. And you could go right down the line, you'll find other comments made by Netanyahu, the other right-wing extremists in the Israeli government, and they keep spewing these lies about Iran being a threat. Iran threatens no one. Iran hasn't attacked another country in 200 or 300 years. Certainly doesn't threaten Israel. Israel has no enemies. The last time Israel had an enemy in the Middle East was during the 1973 Yom Kippur War. And since then, nearly four decades later, Israel has faced no threat whatever. At the same time, regional states are very much threatened by Israel. Israel is the only Middle East state that's nuclear armed and dangerous. And dangerous. And this, I call it Israel's open secret. I mean, it's common knowledge, but Israel doesn't want to talk about it. Now, one of these days they will. Former Prime Minister Ehud Olmert slipped up. Oh, a few years ago, in an interview with a German TV station, I believe, and he practically admitted it. He barely stopped short, but he revealed so much that he effectively revealed it. And then when he got back to Israel, damage control took over, and he tried to reverse what he said. But there it was, on videotape. So he couldn't deny it. I mean, he was there. German saw it. And there it was. So you can't retract the words that have come out of your mouth when they appear on TV. You can say somebody misquoted you in print. That's possible, but not in a TV interview. Well, indeed, Israel is nuclear armed and dangerous. So is it. Well, Israel is, and Iran most certainly is not. And Ayatollah Khomeini, many years ago when he was alive, renounced nuclear power in total. And during the years of the Shah, until 1979, till the revolution, shortly before the revolution, he fled early in the year because of the uprisings. But until late in his regime, Washington encouraged Iran to develop nuclear power, going back to the to Eisenhower's Adams for Peace program in the 1950s. How many people know that? And the Shah got a little bit overzealous. He not only wanted to have a commercial nuclear option for Iran to diversify away from oil that certainly is not inexhaustible, his idea also was to share it with the Middle East and other clients. And that was not at all what Washington had in mind. You don't compete with General Electric and the other U.S. producers of nuclear power plants. That's a no-no. So he got in trouble, and the powers that be manipulated his ouster. And they brought Khomeini to power. They brought him there in early 1979, and then the uprising against the U.S. embassy later in the year, and so on. We know what happened after that. Well, I mean, Khomeini was independent, and America picked the wrong guy to be their leader in Iran, and it's been a multi-decade war in Iran ever since, beginning with the Iran-Iraq War in the 1980s. It killed something like a million on both sides, and America supplied weapons to both sides, but mostly to Saddam, to try to destroy Iran. And Iran was too strong. My God, they were too strong then. Just imagine what they are now, even without nuclear weapons. Oh, I know we're still trying to get to Finian. Oh, I feel awful. If I don't connect with him today, I will reschedule him. That's a promise. And I'll get him back, and we'll try again. Maybe there's another way to do it. By hook or by crook. Oh, I've got an email from him. Let me see what he says to me. I hope I'm back on again. Didn't need that musical interlude. Still trying to get Finney in again. Use the number that I gave, except the third set of digits that is listed 091. Remove the zero and just keep the 91 and give it a try and see what happens. Anyway, I'll continue best I can. Well, I was commenting on the rage to war against Iran, and of course the same thing is going on against Syria. The tactics are a little bit different. I mean, there's been a raging externally generated insurgency in Syria since early last year, stopping short of NATO intervention. And I believe that the strategy is to take down the Assad regime and isolate Iran so that America and Israel and their rogue NATO partners can focus solely on Iran with no strong ally to support it. Well, that's the way imperial rogue states operate. The dirty hands of Washington are behind everything happening in the Middle East. Make no mistake about that. You see something break out, and you can betcha there's a lot of manipulation and orchestration coming out of Washington. This is Obama, who promised as a candidate, and I quoted him, I believe it was in fall 2007, early in his campaign, where he spoke about Afghanistan, and he said, if that war is still going on, if he becomes president, he will end that war and bring home American forces. And his punchline was, and you can take that to the bank, quote unquote. That was his punchline. Well, we all know what's happening. And now the story from Panetta is America's combat role in Afghanistan will end, I think he said, the end of 2013. Well, that's a bald-faced lie. You know, the supposed disengagement from Iraq. There's no disengagement from Iraq. There are still U.S. forces there. There's still over 100,000 private military contractors, including the Blackwater and DynCorp types, that are licensed to kill, and they do it with impunity. I mean, this stuff goes on. They have a corrupt government that does anything it pleases, pursuing the same agenda, the same destructive agenda as America. And we talk about disengagement. America is beefing up its military presence in the Middle East, beefing it up, not cutting it down. More troops are based in Kuwait. More troops are based elsewhere. For certain, America plans one or more new bases in Libya, its latest colony, although that may be delayed because Libya is just rife with violence. That's what happens in the wake of an imperial war. That's what happens. And Libyans want to live free. They don't want an imperial power running their country. They live free under Gaddafi. But they sure don't know. So we have Imperial Washington wanting to control everything. Well, Libyans have other ideas. And all along last year, I expected them to keep struggling for their liberation. And they're doing it. But there's a lot of disparate elements involved, including these so-called rebels, insurgents, let's call them what they are, all different types. And they're warring amongst each other. And they're warring with the real green resistance that want Libya freed, just the way it was under Gaddafi. Not perfect, but compared to now, it was paradise. Paradise. Oh, we've discussed that on the program in the past. The social benefits that Gaddafi gave Libyans that Americans could only dream about, Western Europeans could only dream about, is they're losing them all because of enforced austerity. And Libyans had marvelous, marvelous social benefits. I mean, just incredible stuff. I don't want to go into it now. And that's all gone. It's all gone. Tens of thousands were killed in cold blood, many more injured. Libya was absolutely ravaged, and who knows how long it'll take to restore any semblance of normality in that country. Well, America plans the same thing for Syria. Syria now is going through the ravaging without the bombing, and the ultimate prize is to take down Iran. Iran is no soft target, to say the least. So there are some people in America that thought gives these people pause. America likes to beat up on soft targets, easy ones. Saddam was a pushover, a walkover. So wasn't Gaddafi. Syria certainly is no walkover, and Iran, much more so, is no walkover, not at all. No nuclear weapons, not the kind of destructive weapons that America has and Western powers have and Israel has, but they certainly have plenty of firepower, strong military. They have missiles. They have munitions that can be delivered long distances. They can target Israeli cities. They can target U.S. bases in the region. If Iran is attacked by Israel and or America, it absolutely will retaliate. I have no doubt at all. Israel has one target, especially vulnerable. And if its nuclear facilities are targeted, I can't believe that this one of Israel's will go unscathed, and I'm talking about the Dimona nuclear plant that has nothing to do with generating electricity. It never was built for that purpose. Mordecai Vanunu exposed it. He worked there. He knew what was going on. He exposed it. The London Times, I believe it was, back in the 1980s, wrote about it. London Times, major newspaper. And, of course, Vanunu got arrested, kept in solitary confinement about 18 years, and his life has been made a living hell ever since. They won't let him talk to anybody. They won't let him leave the country. They arrest him every now and then, throw him back in solitary confinement. They do whatever they want. Vanunu didn't. Vanunu was an earlier day Julian Assange or other people like him, Bradley Manning, a whistleblower exposing dirty, ugly truths that people need to know about. And I would say Israel's rogue nuclear program absolutely is a dirty truth that people need to know about. I wrote about it a long time ago, a couple of years ago, and I certainly mentioned it at every opportunity because people need to realize Israel is not only nuclear armed, it's dangerous. Even Jimmy Carter recently estimated, I saw this in print, Jimmy Carter estimated that Israel has about 300 nuclear weapons. Try hearing Obama or George Bush make a statement like that. Jimmy Carter is no saint, far from it. I've had plenty of nasty things to say about Jimmy Carter. But at least he wrote at least one book on Israel-Palestine, and he used the word apartheid. Well, indeed, apartheid absolutely describes what Israel is. I mean, that's only one word that describes its policy. There are a lot of others equally disparaging that explain exactly what the Israeli state is. And it's a regional menace, and because of its nuclear threat, allied with America, it's a global menace. It's a global menace. I mean, they both want hegemony. Israel wants it in the region as a, dare I say, a junior partner to America. Well, you'd never know it if you take a look at the powerful Israeli lobby and AIPAC, especially, not the oldest organization, but when they have their annual meeting, all the power brokers show up. And they show fealty to AIPAC, and last year there was protests against them. There'll be more this year. I wrote about it both times. A fairly recent article. I talked. There's an Occupy AIPAC movement, and they simply want to get out in front, attacking this vicious organization. That's also an illegal one, by the way. How many people know that AIPAC is illegal? They are an unregistered foreign agent. That violates U.S. law. Ever hear anybody say anything about it? No, and you never will. I mean, Obama shows up every year, I believe, to speak at the conference. So do lots of other key people in Congress, other influential people. They should boycott it. They should denounce it. But they come and they pledge fealty to Israel, even at the expense of U.S. interests. So very possibly America could go to war with Iran, because Israel wants it. Can't imagine what good it would do America to go to war with Iran, but it's very possible it can happen, and it's very possible that there could be military intervention against Syria. I don't discount it at all. I think the possibility is far too grave to ignore, and I've written plenty about it, including my new article today. There's an organization that I wrote about today called the Bipartisan Policy Center. 2007, former leading senators founded the organization. It's a pro-imperial front group. Senators included George Mitchell, Bob Dole, Tom Daschle. Don't have all the names in front of me, but you get the idea. These type of people of influence, former majority leaders of both parties, influential people. And their board of directors includes a couple of generals, a lot of other corporate types related to nuclear interest and other imperial interests. Their senior fellows or senior advisors include five former U.S. senators. Those are the kind of people associated with this group, and it is actively promoting war on Iran, and they've written documents assailing Iran for the past 4 years since 2008. I think this is the fourth one. And they call it Meeting the Challenge. Anybody can find my article. Top featured on my blog. It's on Global Research. You can find it. I'm sure you'll find it before long on a number of sites. And it says, promoting. former U.S. policymakers promoting war on Iran. They should be promoting peace, not war. Instead, they're promoting war. And a war with Iran, heaven forbid, could really morph into a general war, and there's another name for that. It's called World War III. That's the way World War I began. One country had a dispute with another, and then different countries came in on both sides, and all of a sudden we had a four-year carnage that killed many millions. World War II was a little bit different, but the same basic idea. A lot of countries got involved on either side, and many more millions died. And there were no nuclear weapons, of course, in either of those wars. There certainly are now, and all the other weapons of mass destruction. Just imagine the carnage if we get a World War III. And if anybody thinks that Russia and China are going to stay silent, they have important interests in the region. China is very dependent on Middle East oil. America wants to cut China out. America has a lot of agendas, but one of the agendas is to cut China out, if not entirely, mainly. So that was one of the schemes in Libya, remove their access to Libyan oil. And Iran is the world's third largest provider of oil, and it's the best kind. It's the light sweet, easily refined, and China's dependent on it. China does not want to lose that source. America wants China to lose the source. And if America takes Iran down and a new pro-Western government comes in, then it's a game changer. Well, I think Iran will try to stop it. So will Russia, including against Syria. Right now, China and Russia are the bulwarks against U.S. imperialism and the Security Council. Well, if America can't get the Security Council to give it a resolution it wants, it'll just go around the Security Council and find some other way. Dare I suggest a false flag? Well, we all remember 9/11, the classic false flag. Look what's happened since 9/11. Well, when America, if America can't go through the front door, it'll go through the back door, through the side window, through the chimney. It'll do it whatever way it wishes, and I expect that something along that line will happen. And the most likely possibility is a false flag, a manufactured incident to blame on Iran. We all remember Gulf of Tonkin. We remember the Maine. We remember the so-called North Korean invasion. Well, I don't know if we do remember the so-called North Korean invasion of South Korea in 1950, mid-year, June. What most people don't know is that the South first attacked the North multiple times. And finally, the North responded. Well, that was Harry Truman's war. He wanted a war with North Korea, so he provoked one by continuing to use the fascist Syngman Rhee regime to instigate violence against the North, and finally the North responded that they had every right to do in self-defense. That's what the UN Charter authorizes. North Korea didn't break any laws. South Korea did. And, of course, the manipulative hands of Washington behind South Korea That was the real villain. And it just continues all along. Noriega in Panama, Grenada early in the Reagan administration on bogus reasons. Well, there was no false flag. Just lies to send U.S. forces into Bahrain, supposedly to rescue U.S. medical students. I mean, it's so absurd. It's laughable, but yet those were the headlines. And Grenada, this tiny little island. The Chicago police in an afternoon could blow over the Grenadian government. So just imagine what Marines could do. And on and on and on afterwards, we've attacked the belligerently non-hostile, non-threatening countries, certainly post 9/11. This has been the most egregious stuff in more recent years. One illegal war after another. Afghanistan didn't threaten America, had nothing to do with 9/11, neither did Saddam. International law is very clear. No nation may interfere in the internal affairs of another. And the only exception that the UN Charter allows is self-defense. If a nation is attacked by another, it can defend itself, but only until the Security Council acts. It has the final say, and it can order the attack called off, or it can allow it to go on in self-defense. Try reading that in the New York Times. New York Times writes all the time. I love to do media critiques featuring the New York Times because that is the leading print voice in America, and what they write in feature stories circulates around the world. It gets picked up all over the place, and it usually ends up on television. And they have waged a media war against Syria and Iran, and they certainly did it against Afghanistan and Iraq, spewing lies. We all remember Judith Miller, whose front page Pentagon handout sheet daily probably did more to instigate war against Iraq than anything else. It was all lies. She literally was a Pentagon press agent. She wasn't a news reporter. And we got the same thing going on today, whether it's in articles, supposedly news reporting, or op-eds, or editorials. It's a New York Times war against Iran and Syria, spewing lies, promoting war but not saying it. In fact, even at times saying they stopped short of endorsing war. The hell they stopped short. I mean, everything they say and everything they write is an advertisement for war. And again, they'll have a lead role if there's another war against Syria and Iran. And they certainly did it against Gaddafi in Libya, mindless of the tens of thousands of people who died, many more tens of thousands injured, huge refugee population, country devastated. Try hearing the New York Times explain any of that. Some of their reporters, I don't know whether this was the Times, and I'm just about out of time. I don't know whether their reporters were involved, but there were U.S. major media reporters in Libya giving bombing coordinates to NATO. So maybe New York Times reporters were among them. That's the role that media scoundrels play when America goes to war. They cheerlead them, and maybe they hit a new low by providing bombing coordinates to NATO killers, NATO's killing machine. That's what NATO is. NATO was never about defense. NATO from inception was about offense. And, of course, it certainly proves it now, aligning with all the imperial wars, slaughtering people, and they are willfully targeted. I'm at the end of the program, and I miss Tinian. I'll email him as soon as I get off air, and I did explaining we had a connection problem, but I'll get him rescheduled as soon as possible, and I'll get him back. I sincerely apologize for that. I don't like my program to be a monologue. I want to give time to guests and let them comment. I've got two from the U.S. Over the weekend, so hopefully there'll be no problem on that. A little easier connecting in New York and the Bay Area in California than it is on the Horn of Africa. But please join us Saturday and Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time.